firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, 100% more machine guns, other things at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Melody Lauer.
Hello.
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 How are you?
I am doing okay.
We're back in the studio again. Running late, though, which...
You know what? I don't think that either of us are as tired.
That's true. We haven't driven 17 hours or whatever.
Well, I drove 9 yesterday, so...
Yeah, well, anyway. Hey, guess what?
What?
This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition and LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire or drowning, you can never really have too much ammo. So, apparently, Melody's taking a multivitamin or something with coffee. Did that go down poorly?
It did. Ugh.
Phrasing?
Yeah, I mean, and Joe's... See, can you throw like an Archer phrasing thing over top of that, Joe?
Phrasing?
Thank you, Joe. See, Joe talks a lot during the show, and you guys just never hear it.
He doesn't talk a lot, but enough.
Enough.
And it's
I'd actually like for him
things.
To talk more. You know, so you need to get the mic going in the booth so that...
Yeah, come on, Joe.
Next episode? Cool. Hey, joining us today, good friend of mine, an awesome shooter, and I'll let him introduce himself even more, Caleb Giddings.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Hey, Caleb. How are you?
Warm. That's how I am.
Nice.
Compared to the rest of the United States, apparently.
Yeah. No, it's cold up here. It's like 7 right now.
So what's interesting is, like, I know what Caleb sounds like in real life because we're friends.
Yeah.
And so he's got his radio voice going on, which I'm finding so incredibly amusing right now.
Well, it's his professional voice because not only is he representing himself, he's representing some other things, too. And speaking of, do you want to talk about who you are, what you do, what you're doing now, and we'll hop right in?
Yeah, absolutely. I know some of your listeners are probably familiar with me and what some of the stuff I've done, but for those that aren't, I currently own National Armory down in beautiful Pompano Beach, Florida. After having had every other job in the gun industry, I decided, hey, let's try retail. National Armory is one of the companies that's under the Gunway brand. So we also have a retail store in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. We do some manufacturing as well, including a line of suppressors. And just this year, we're coming out with a new brand that we're calling Mute Industries that's going to take over the suppressor manufacturing, as well as making some cool new products that I have demo samples of here in my office for testing. We've got a 9mm Glock comp and a quiet shuttle system for ARs to reduce the springy noise in the stock. So we've got a lot going on. I personally have a lot going on as well because in addition to all of that stuff, I still, you know, once every blue moon will update my blog. And I also have a semi-occasional column on Recoil Web where I talk about the horrible things that you see in retail.
Right.
And after taking about 3 years off from competitive shooting, I'm finally getting back into the competitive shooting thing, trying to focus back on what I used to do very well, shoot revolvers.
Yeah. Well, and that's an amazing segue. Thank you. Thank you for that. See,
you're welcome.
I can say it, but I can't spell it the right way. No, I can. Segue. Sieg.
Sega. Oh, see, I would not. No, nope. Anyway, there is no way I'd be able to spell
I know,
that.
But you spell about as well as my 8-year-old does.
Probably worse, honestly.
Yeah, he's actually not bad. One of the things he's got handled well.
This is why we have autocorrect. Thank you very much.
You know, you're everything that's wrong with the country right now. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so, revolvers. Let me ask you this, man. What, I guess, has drawn you to revolvers over the course of your career? Or interest in guns? I mean, what about it for you has kept you in those?
So I've always come back to revolvers, and it's sort of like this, you know, nasty ex-girlfriend that you just can't quit, or, you know, cocaine habit, whatever you want to call it. But for me, the benefit to shooting a revolver and the attraction to shooting a revolver is when you think about the starting state. So if I'm shooting a match with a wheel gun, right, my starting ammunition state is the same place where most guys do a reload. Right. You know, if they're down to 6 rounds in the gun, they're like, oh, let's get this mag out and let's get some more rounds in here. So when you start the stage, you're already out of ammo, and by the time you actually need to reload, you're really, really out of ammo.
Yeah.
And it forces me, and as a shooter, it's always forced me to actually be very present in the moment of what I'm doing. You know, I literally can't worry about the next shot because I have an 8-pound trigger pull that I've got to get through to make sure that this shot's good. And then once that one's gone, well, I've got another 8-pound trigger pull, do that 4 more times. And now I have a, you know, best case scenario, I've got a 2.5-second reload to perform. So there's a lot that goes into shooting a revolver that forces you to actually put your focus, at least for me as a shooter, it forces me to actually put my focus on the area on properly executing the fundamentals of marksmanship. And then what I found is the more I shoot revolvers, the easier that stuff becomes with any other gun. So if I spend a season, a year shooting nothing but revolvers, and then I have to go pick up my duty gun for the Air Force and go shoot a qual course, I can do it, you know, upside down with one eye closed, or one-handed, as it were.
Right. There was recently video that came out, and I'm sure you saw it, because it's all over the internet right now, where two dudes go in to rob a convenience store with a fake gun, turns out. And security guard, who I don't know if he was working that strip mall or whatever, walks in and shoots both of them one-handed with a revolver. Yeah, says some very witty things while he does it. But what struck me and what I was kind of paying attention to during that was kind of the cadence of fire that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And it was much slower than most of the self-defense shootings that you see these days, whether it's law enforcement or private citizen or whatever, just because the revolver does limit your rate of fire. But his hits were actually much better than I would have expected watching mm-hmm. him shoot. Do you think that there's anything to, not that the revolver is more mechanically accurate, but some of the things surrounding it force you to shoot better, or can cause you to shoot better if you sort of know what you're doing?
I absolutely do. I think that it's the slowing down effect of things. So if I've got my match-tuned revolver, I know when I am jamming that gun as fast as I can spin the cylinder and manipulate the trigger, I can get down to 0.2 splits with it, which is really, really fast for a wheel gun, and that's me doing everything right.
Yeah, yeah.
But under match conditions, I'm probably going to be consistently, you know, on close, wide-open targets, I'm going to be consistently in 0.25. And what that does for me is I do slow down. I do see more of the sight. I tend to, if I have reams and reams of data from my own shooting, and I can't speak for anyone else, but when I look at my historical scores, when I'm shooting a revolver, I tend to shoot it more accurately. Usually, probably about 10 to 15% better hits shooting a wheel gun than I do with a semi-auto. And part of that for me is And again, this is under match conditions because I shot revolvers in competition for years. Part of that for me is knowing that I have zero room for error. You know, if you're talking about an 18-round IDPA stage, well, I've got 24 rounds of ammunition on my body, and a missed shot means an extra reload, which means I've now tanked the stage. So it definitely forces me to think more about making sure my hits are exactly where I want them to be, instead of just being like, "Ah, I got extra bullets in here. I can toss a few, you know, freebies down range."
Well, we got about 30 seconds left in the segment, and then I'm going to say something, and then if you could respond to it once we come back. But for me, one of the hardest things that I have learned hasn't been shooting fast at all, because I can shoot really damn fast pretty easily. Now, hitting stuff at that speed, it kind of depends, but forcing myself to slow down has been something that has come with more experience and more practice. And I want to get your thoughts on how important that is, but we got to go to break. Right now we're talking with Caleb Giddings from National Armory. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scattergun since 1977. A legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match grade accuracy, superior ergonomics and concealability, with modern service pistol capacity and reliability, at www.wilsoncombat.com. I feel much more famous than I am right now. There's like, I see like bright lights and stuff like that. And anyway, we're talking with Caleb Giddings. And before the break, I was sort of talking about whether or not it was important when you develop your skills more to sort of like self-regulate, and what your thoughts are on that. How important is that?
Well, it's interesting because I've actually always had the opposite problem in my shooting career, because I started in a traditional NRA bullseye. That was like the first competitions that I ever shot. So going slow and aiming my ass off has never been difficult for me. That's my bread and butter and what my brain likes to default to. But what I see a lot with people coming up now is exactly what you described. Everybody wants to go fast. You know, they all want a Ricky Bobby everything and shoot really fast, look really cool, and do that. And what happens is you reach a point where you can do well competition shooting by being faster and more athletic than other shooters, and that's usually kind of in the Midland C class range. Mm-hmm. Once you want to start winning your class and moving up to, you know, B and A and to, you know, master and GM, you really actually have to be able to get precision hits. Everybody thinks USPSA is all, you know, a hose fest. USPSA has the toughest penalties for misses of any shooting sport. So right. You really need to, there's a certain point where learning when to chop the throttle back and aim, and when it's okay to jam the throttles all the way open and hose bullets, is actually a really difficult skill for a lot of people to master. And you see a lot of people getting stuck in, you know, middle B, high A, as they're dealing with that skill.
So interestingly enough, I mean, looking at that, what do you think is the, I guess, what qualifies for when you have to be more precise, in your opinion, Caleb?
So in a match context, the times that you really need to get your hits are on the targets that offer the best opportunities for points. And this is sort of a match strategy thought process. Rob Leatham actually is a real big proponent of not super duper hosing close wide open targets, because what you do, if I've got an array of 5 yards of three targets, and I hose them and I end up shooting, you know, C each on each of those targets, I'm giving away easy points that I should have gotten. So there's a balance of developing your skill set so you can shoot those really fast and shoot all alphas, and then at the same time not also giving away points on difficult targets or partial targets. There's a lot of mental calculation that goes into it. My other job, I'm a combat arms instructor in the Air Force, as you guys know. I emphasize precision over everything for my students who we're dealing with in the military, because by and large, when we're teaching handgun employment for the military, which is primarily what I teach, the student already knows how to shoot the gun fast. To borrow a phrase from Ernie Langdon, if somebody's shooting at a C-130 pilot and they have to respond with a handgun, that guy's going to beat that trigger up like it owes him money. So he already knows how to do that. I don't have to teach him how to yank the trigger like a spastic monkey. What I have to do is teach him how to maybe yank the trigger slightly less spastically and keep the sights in kind of generally where he wants the bullets to go.
Well, so here's kind of a tangential question I wanted to ask you, since we were talking about everybody wants to Ricky Bobby and teaching people things and all that. Can you teach me how to post videos on Instagram and Facebook where magazines fall faster than gravity would drop them? Because that seems like a really cool thing that I'd like to learn, you know?
I absolutely can. What you need is Final Cut Pro, and you need to use, there's a, it's funny, actually. So how they do this is, in Hollywood, have you ever seen like a movie where somebody gets punched in the face and their head whips around super, super quick, probably far quicker than a human head would come around in real life?
Yeah.
From a punch velocity.
Yeah.
So what they do in these special effects is they will go in and they'll remove, in a half second of footage that's shot at 30 frames per second, you've got 15 frames. They'll remove 5 of those frames that involve the head moving. And what that does to our eye is it makes everything look more explosive and faster.
You mean they speed it up?
No, they remove. They remove it.
It's less speeding it up than removing bits of time to make the compressed effect look quicker.
Oh, you're saying they edit the video to look faster than they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, weird, right?
Huh. Well, you know, I think that the way you could disprove that is if you play the regular clip that you've edited and then play the normal clip that you haven't edited in slow motion, because that would totally, totally prove that you weren't cheating and changing films. Anyway, that's very tangential. Sorry. I wanted to make fun of somebody that I know that you want to make fun of without actually calling them out specifically, because that's not what the show's for.
But right.
Anyway.
Passive-aggressive people.
I do just want to put this out there. If you are a civilian and, you know, not involved in the military or law enforcement and not like a super-duper prepper and you own a gas mask, you're also a tool bag.
I mean, you know what? I'm going to give you a counterpoint to that.
Okay, hit me.
There are plenty of places that if you go and take classes there, Darcy for one, you might need to have that for any sort of force on force that you're doing.
A gas mask?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it's also a polycarbonate, so it'll stop SIM rounds and stuff like that. So, I mean,
That's very generous of you.
Well, so here's why, though, because
Do you want a gas mask? Is that why?
No, I don't. That's okay. That is not my fetish, sir. in fact, that is decidedly not my fetish. I have thrown up on the inside of one before, though, which was really unpleasant. Yeah, right? Anyway, which is another story about why I don't eat potato salad anymore. But, wow, so far off the rails.
This devolved very quickly.
So the issue with having, like, really, like, people, like, I'm at, not just, like, acquaintances with, but, like, people I'm actually friends with on the show, like that time we had Annette on and you two were being completely, entirely inappropriate.
And completely professional.
No, lies. Anyway. So where was I? Oh, yeah. So slowing yourself down can sometimes be important. So
Absolutely. It
seems like a lot of people make issue of like the capacity thing. And I don't disagree with them. And to be specific to you, I'm not, I carry an 18 round gun pretty much every day of my life. And I don't plan on changing anytime soon. So I'm not telling anybody like, oh, hey, you know, if you don't do it this way, you're wrong. But I think that we have sort of like poo-pooed this as a defensive tool for the last, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. I, you know, pick your start date, whatever. And maybe it's got more validity than we are led to believe, you know?
I absolutely think it does. The thing with a wheel gun, and especially a small wheel gun, so when we're, you know, when we're talking about, I have carried a Ruger GP100 for personal defense. I don't very often because it weighs 1 million pounds and it's a wonderful gun, but it is very big, heavy gun. When you're talking about the little guns, the snub-nosed revolvers for personal defense, where you have a sort of a U-shaped utility curve where on one end of it, they're extremely useful for the absolute novice because they have a very simple manual of arms. They are very simple to verify if they're loaded, and they are difficult to negligently discharge. So for the true novice, they're actually quite useful. And then as you become more and more skilled, they become less useful because they are more difficult to shoot than a Shield or a 43 or a lot of the other semi-automatic guns in that size bracket. And then as you become more and more skilled, as you come out the other side of that U-shaped utility curve, they become much more valuable because of some of the other things that they do that you can't do with very small semi-automatic pistols.
Right. I have some more questions about that, but we need to go to break. So we're gonna put a pin in it. Just hold that thought. We're talking with Caleb Giddings from National Armory, and you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the new 1200 lumen EDCL 2T handheld, or 500 lumen EDCL 1T handheld, to the 1000 lumen XH35 or 300 lumen XC1B weapon mounted lights, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell "Aziz light" ever again. Now, with more lumens and improved switching, the best just got brighter. Surefire. And as a continued special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 20% off everything at the Surefire.com web store, except batteries and suppressors, by entering the discount code AZIZLIGHT. That is AZIZLIGHT. No spaces. Anyway, we're talking with Caleb Giddings from National Armory about revolvers and revolver stuff and whether or not they're useful and things like that. And The one thing that, seems to get brought up a lot is, you know, well, capacity. The capacity is a problem. Mm-hmm. And I always, you know, if you handed me a handgun that had, you know, 100 rounds in it and was still concealable, I'd be all about that, especially if they were, like, effective rounds. But
right, like one of those like futuristic guns that shoots microscopic beads that, you know, quarters to white.
Well, so once we get into rail guns, we're going to be able to do some really interesting things, but we're not quite there yet. So, you know, at least not for man portable rail guns.
Right.
Well, what Caleb was talking about that I'm really interested to hear more of is he was talking about that U-shaped curve, and he said there's things that the revolver gets useful for once you get more advanced skill, and I'm like, come on, tell more.
Well, we'll come back to capacity.
Yes, tell us more, Caleb.
Okay, so one of the big advantages that I get out of a revolver, out of that top end of the utility curve, is thanks to advantages in materials and construction. I have sitting on my desk right now Smith & Wesson 351 PD, which is a 22 Magnum revolver, and it weighs, I pick it up, I put Crimson Trace grips on it, which weigh almost as much as the gun itself, and fully loaded, it weighs just a hair more than an unloaded M9 magazine, which I have in my other hand.
Yeah.
Right? So what I can do with that gun in terms of deep concealment, NPEs, and that sort of stuff is I legitimately would have a hard time doing even with something as small as a Glock 42.
Yeah.
It's the only gun I've ever been able to carry in basketball shorts, which is useful for someone like me who runs and, you know, goes to the gym and does physical fitness activities like a weirdo.
I was going to I've been going to the gym very, very consistently for like 4 days now.
I was going
to
say, it's been like four days.
Hey, shut up. Don't discourage me and don't fat shame. So
not discouraging. I'm just trying to be realistic here.
Well, no. It's 2018. We're not realistic about anything right now. I'm a pretty princess, and if you tell me otherwise, you're a racist.
You have glitter on your nose. Yes, you are a pretty princess.
Because I have a 3-year-old daughter. Anyway, basketball shorts.
Continue.
Right. Well, the other thing that I found with these, with small revolvers versus small automatics, and this is a small revolvers are also a lot more friendly to compromised firing positions than you're going to get with small automatics. They're a lot more friendly to, you know, goofy things like being fired through a coat. They're a lot more. And the other thing is, and this is like, and I've spent a lot of time testing this, they are more accurate. And I mean genuinely more mechanically accurate than
fixed barrel
automatics. And for me, and for other guys that I've talked to about this, the advantages that I get in deploying the gun from a compromised firing position, increased accuracy, and increased concealability, for me, make the small revolver kind of an optimum choice, not in every circumstance. I still carry a full-size semi-automatic pistol a lot of the time, but if I'm going to carry a small gun, I'm going to carry a wheel gun and not a shield or a 43 or something like that.
Well, it's curious that you said that they're better for like shooting from compromised positions or through coats or things like that. So here's what I'm thinking though, is people will use sometimes, you know, like those lower information people or those lower trained people will use those kinds of things as an excuse, but there's still tactics involved in that kind of stuff. It's kind of like that old adage of like, oh, well, you can just shoot through a purse. Well, when you put that to a test, that's actually really difficult to do well. And it actually probably shouldn't be done. So where do you balance like, hey, this isn't actually a tactic I want to rely on. It's just possible. So I guess how do you justify that overall?
Well, and that's where that U-shaped utility curve comes back into play. When you're talking people at the low information end of that, I'm not recommending a revolver to them because it's better in an entangled gunfight. I'm recommending a revolver to them because they're less likely to shoot themselves in the leg with it. When you come out on the Chuck Haggard end of the spectrum, revolvers make more sense because for those reasons, because I understand, people like Chuck understand, smart people understand that if I'm shooting someone through my coat with a wheel gun, I'm probably in physical contact with that person. You know, I'm not shooting somebody 7 yards away through my coat. That's stupid. And when you come out on the higher information end of that, that's why when I talk about this stuff, I really am, I genuinely have to be careful of my audience, because I don't want to tell somebody on the low end, oh yeah, they're great for shooting through coats and firing from compromised positions, things like that, because they're going to get unrealistic ideas of what they can do with a revolver at that point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is true of anything, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, and I think the other issue too is that a lot of the people, you know, even the listeners, if someone is regularly listening to this show, the chances are that they are, even if they are of relatively low skill compared to the rest of the people listening to the show, they're still probably one of the best shooters in the world, statistically.
Right.
I mean, the pool of skill and knowledge, I don't think people really understand how small that is in comparison to the overall number of people that have a firearm, either for recreation or self-defense or whatever, you know?
I am reminded of it aggressively every time I make a YouTube video, though.
Well, there's your problem, Caleb. It's the Youtubes.
YouTube. Yeah, I like that YouTube money, though. But you did want to talk about capacity, though, which is an interesting subject.
Well, yeah. So getting back into that, so like I am someone that advocates for as many as you can carry, consistently and reliably. That having been said, I mean the data that you probably don't need all that capacity. You probably don't even need all that capacity if there's multiple people in public. Now, and to be very clear, I'm talking about out on the streets or the public thoroughfare where people always seem to get killed, at least on the internet. I was making a kilt in the streets joke for anybody that didn't catch that one. But I know you got that one, but you know, I sometimes sort of lowball them in, and I wanted to make sure that people knew what I was talking about. But when you're looking at encounters that occur in public, not in a fixed location like a place of business or a home, the number of rounds fired, even in really bad encounters, is generally very, very low for a private citizen. So, while the capacity thing is something that I want to have it, I think it's good to have. It's not, it's not as important maybe as everybody talks about.
Well, here's the thing, and I agree with that, and I have two perspectives on this, because on the one hand, when I'm at my other job, I usually have an M4 and 7 mags and an M9 and 3 mags for that, so I have all of the ammo. But I have that for a specific reason, because there's the expectation that that even CONUS work, if somebody tries to ram up the gate or something like that, my job's to shoot that guy, and I might need a lot of ammo. When you take that, when you backpedal this up to the civilian world, all we are doing as civilians is playing a very complicated game of risk management when we carry a gun.
Right.
You know, we've all accepted that the world is a gnarly enough place that we might need to shoot somebody at some point. And then from there on, it's just saying, well, how gnarly do I think it's going to be?
Yeah.
You know? And I've sort of reached a point now where I am far more likely to leave my house without a gun than I am to leave it without pepper spray, for example.
Right.
And I also travel, and I a lot for work, and there are times where simply taking a gun with me is more hassle than it's worth, so I don't, but yeah. I do travel with pepper spray everywhere I go, and things like that, because I found that the majority of the sketchy situations that I have gotten into in my life, only one of them has ever resulted in a gun being drawn on the civilian side, and the rest of them have all been managed effectively with a good 40 time being aware of what's going on around me, and one's pepper spray. So,
well, let me interrupt because we have to go to break, and then we'll hop right back into this. We're talking with Caleb Giddings from National Armory. You're listening to Ballistic Radio.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. So we're talking with Caleb Giddings about his 40 time, which is, in fact, not how quickly he can drink a 40, which is probably actually faster than he can run a 40.
I was actually going to ask about that. I'm like, what is he talking about? What are you talking about, Caleb?
I was 40-yard sprint.
Yeah, I know.
See, I didn't know that.
That was from Melody.
Yeah, Thank you. Thank you for clarifying, because I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, you know. And then pepper spray. So please continue, and I'm sorry I interrupted.
Oh, no, it's quite all right. So it's back to that risk management concept. What level of, you know, when we're looking at carrying guns in the civilian world, you're basically saying, what level of risk have I accepted is reasonably probable in my life today? And that's what you're preparing for when we put on our war belts and all of these other things. And it's why, again, if I have to leave the house without a gun, or I choose to leave the house without a gun, I will rarely leave the house without pepper spray, because the most common level of risk that the average person is going to run into will frequently be like an aggressive panhandler. And you can solve that pretty efficiently with pepper spray most of the time. Mm-hmm. It's also why I've driven by, and I'm sure this is true for everybody, you've driven by way more car crashes in your life than you've driven past gunfights in the United States, obviously,
yeah.
Right? And yet people don't carry, they don't get the medical training, they don't carry tourniquets, they don't have a trauma kit in their vehicle when there's a way, way higher likelihood that you're going to use one of those things in the course of your life, or be in a situation where having that skill could alter the course of someone else's life in a positive way, than you are to be in a situation where being able to make a 25-yard headshot could alter someone's life in a positive way.
Right. Though I will say, if you're in the position where being able to make a 25-yard headshot can alter somebody's life in a positive way, it's really important that you can make that 25-yard headshot. So,
absolutely. Why I advocate a high standard of training as well.
Yeah, right. And I think that it's weird, because a lot of this conversation is dependent on probabilities and you know, typical things that happen. And I can really see where people get off the rails on it, or maybe they're not even off the rails. They just seem off the rails to me, and they're not. I mean, you know, Melody and I had an interesting disagreement about somebody else did something and posted a picture of it online, and without getting like too in depth, essentially they were carrying, two G34s with RMRs and then two reloads for both guns, which struck me as, what's funny is the two guns isn't what struck me as odd necessarily, because, you know, if you can carry one, carrying a second doesn't actually require that much more effort. It was the two reloads for both. And I don't know why that was like my meter, but Melody brought up that, like, you know, if you can articulate why you're doing something, whether it makes sense to you or not, you know, who's to say they're wrong? And that's actually really true about all of this, because there's plenty of people that would look at, you know, me putting a five-round J-frame in my pocket and calling it good as, wow, you're really paranoid. What, you know, what's wrong? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So,
no, absolutely.
Well, and it all comes down to accurate risk management. You kind of talked about this a little bit, Caleb, yourself. But if I have had a credible threat to my life, or I have an ex who, you know, is getting out of prison and has threatened to come and kill me, it makes a lot more sense that I would never, ever leave the house without a firearm and a knife or whatever, than it would someone who's just has no real credible threats to their life going out walking their dog and choosing pepper spray. So, you know, and like I was talking with John about, you know, having that articulable reason of, well, this is why I'm choosing to do this. Or sometimes we go through training evolutions where we're like, okay, this is kind of the thing I'm thinking about, and this is the kind of thing I'm focused on. And so that means I'm going to change it this way. And then later on we go through something else that goes, you know what, maybe I was going a little overboard here, and maybe I can scale it back. But as long as we're thinking and we're reasoning as we're doing this, we're not just doing it because it's cool. I think that's the key component to anything we choose to carry.
Absolutely. And I think John also made a good point in that there are plenty of people who would think that, you know, me carrying just a Ruger LCR is weird. I've had, in the last couple of years, a lot of opportunities to interact with people who are entirely outside the gun-owning circle in any, you know, in any meaningful way, and to interact with these people in a social setting. And often they're surprised that I'm carrying pepper spray and a pocket knife. That alone is an alien thing for them. They've never met anyone who carries so much stuff on them. And then at that point, I don't even mention the J-frame or the flashlight, because it'd just be mind-boggling.
Well, and yeah. So what's funny to me is I'm thinking back on a time, and there was literally time. So imagine this. Back when I was doing property management and stuff like that, where if I was going to a really bad neighborhood, in addition to the Glock 22 with +3 magazine extension, I would carry cross-draw, and this is how dumb I was, an FN57 in a OWB holster.
Yeah.
No lie, right? So... And
you
I
derpy.
Oh yeah. Well, so here's what's funny though is, for the level of knowledge and training I had, that made sense to what I thought was, you know, and I was completely wrong. And looking back on it, it's just like, duh. But you know, so like, I get it. I get the thought process, and the reason why, and a lot of people don't understand this, but like the reason why I try so hard to battle stupid things when I see them is because I used to do them too. I get it. And until somebody until somebody shows you that you're wrong, you're going to keep doing that stuff.
Well, I think we all have some pretty dirty skeletons in our gun closets. I mean, you know, my first exposure to revolvers was a Taurus Tracker in .357 Magnum. And man, I thought that gun was so cool.
I had a Raging Bull.
That's worse.
Right? So.
Yeah.
But, Melody is dying now.
I'm sorry. I'm just thinking of Caleb with a Raging Bull, and it's just, it's hilarious.
No, I had it. Caleb didn't.
Oh, had the Raging Bull.
Either one is hilarious.
Pay more attention, Jesus.
I'm just picturing the gun in my head because I remember them very clearly, and oh, man.
I have done amazing about not making fun of Caleb for being short. When he said he had basketball shorts, I'm like, well, I know that's not for playing basketball in, is what I wanted to say, but I didn't say that. Yeah, and look at her making fun of you like that. Can you believe this?
Yeah, of course I can. Of course I can. Just to give her more ammunition, over the course of my firearms career, I have owned, I think, at separate times, 5 Taurus revolvers. Now, admittedly, the last one I owned specifically to talk about how terrible it was, but, you know, it took a long time for me to fix myself because I kept going back and being like, I want to try these. Surely this will be the good one.
Right. Yeah.
I felt that way about a certain 1911 manufacturer that I will not mention because we will get hate mail for the rest of our...
No, you owned a Kimber. It's okay.
I owned several.
Yeah.
Several.
I owned a Kimber as well. So, I mean, like, so when I talk crap about, like, Kimber or Taurus or something like that, it's not because I woke up one day and decided, hey, I'm going to throw hate at this. You know, it's because, no, I did it, and it was dumb. So
my, the former editor of the gun magazine that I used to own, owned a Kimber that was so bad, Hilt Niam himself said, this gun is trash and I can't fix it.
That's pretty much what, yeah, my first experience was. But anyway, moving back on to revolvers.
Yeah, I don't know. We're coming up towards the end of the show. We only got 2 minutes left. So, thank you for coming on to the show. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for having me, Dad.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Two, if people want to find out more about National Armory or anything like that, how do they do that?
Yeah, the easiest way to find out more about National Armory or about what we're doing with Gunway or Mute Industries is to follow us on Facebook. So you search for National Armory on Facebook. you can check us out. I know John's been doing a great job of tagging us because we collabed on a little Sweet Glock project.
Yep.
And then go check out the new Mute Industries page on Facebook as well. We're dropping some really cool products, hopefully around SHOT Show, which I will be at. So if you see a midget in a Rascal suit or towing four RSR cars daisy chained together, that's me.
Awesome. That's perfect. So, so you're doing blog stuff too, sometimes. Where's that at?
If you want to do rich stuff, you can check me out on gunnuts.net or recoilweb.com. My column goes up occasionally on Mondays. And then I do most of my content these days on YouTube because I'm a glutton for bad comments. And that's youtube.com/gunnutsmedia.
Nice. Well, hey, man, I really appreciate it. Thanks again. And I will talk to you soon. Be safe, brother.